He was the boss of bosses, the godfather of the most powerful crime family in America. Paul Castellano didn't live in a smoky backroom or slum apartment. He ruled the Gambino family from a Staten Island mansion with white columns, wearing silk pajamas, and speaking more about real estate than racketeering. But that New Age style of mob leadership earned him enemies, especially John Gotti, a street-hardened gangster who believed the old rules still applied. Kill or be killed. On December 16th, 1985, outside the Sparks Steakhouse in Midtown Manhattan, the American Mafia witnessed its most brazen coup in history. Castellano and his underboss were gunned down in cold blood on a crowded street, with witnesses everywhere, and not a single soul willing to talk. It was a hit that violated every mob law, but it made one man the king of New York's underworld. And yet, what came next was even more shocking. The FBI had been listening the whole time. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Making of a Murder. The cold wind cut through the streets of Manhattan on December 16th, 1985. But it didn't matter. Business was business, and tonight, Sparks Steakhouse was the destination. Paul Castellano, the 70-year-old head of the Gambino crime family, was expected at 5:45 p.m. sharp. No bodyguards, just a short walk from the car to the door. What Castellano didn't know was that four gunmen were already in place, wearing long trench coats and waiting calmly in the crowd. Inside their coats were 357 Magnum revolvers. Two more men waited nearby to signal when Big Paul arrived. They were all soldiers for John Gotti. But to understand how this moment came to define the fall of one empire and the rise of another, we have to step back to the strange way Castellano became boss in the first place. A boss by blood, not by bullet. Carlo Gambino, the revered patriarch of the Gambino family, had ruled with precision and pragmatism for decades. But when he died of natural causes in 1976, instead of passing the throne to his street-savvy underboss, Agnello Della Croce, Gambino chose his cousin-in-law, Paul Castellano. It was an insult to many in the family. Castellano, often mocked as the Pope, didn't get his hands dirty. He considered himself more a businessman than a killer. He rarely made appearances in Brooklyn or the Bronx. Instead, he surrounded himself with construction magnates, union heads, and politicians. He had one golden rule: stay low, stay quiet, and stay rich. Violence was for suckers. He preferred influence. But that style didn't sit well with everyone. John Gotti, the people's gangster. John Gotti, a rising capo from Queens, embodied the opposite. Flashy, charismatic, and unapologetically violent, Gotti ran the Bergen Hunt and Fish Club like a community center and a command post. He had his own crew, his own soldiers, and his own values: loyalty, strength, and visible power. When Della Croce, Gotti's mentor and Castellano's underboss, died of cancer in early December 1985, Castellano didn't even attend the funeral. It was the final insult. Gotti knew his time had come. Castellano had been indicted on federal racketeering charges and faced life in prison. Worse, word had spread that Castellano was planning to whack Gotti and his allies for unauthorized drug deals. The street saw weakness. Gotti saw opportunity. The plot begins. The plan was simple but suicidal. Kill Castellano in the open. Do it quickly, and don't get caught. This went against every mob tradition. Bosses weren't to be killed without approval from the commission, a governing body made up of the heads of the five families. But Gotti bypassed them all. He believed Castellano had forfeited his respect. In Gotti's mind, This wasn't murder. This was a revolution. The team assembled included key Gotti loyalists, Sammy the Bull Gravano, Frank De Chico, Salvatore Scala, and Angelo Ruggiero. Gravano would later say it was like taking down a president. The hit at 5:45 p.m., a black Lincoln pulled up outside Sparks' steakhouse. Inside, Castellano and Thomas Bilotti, his newly appointed underboss. As the car stopped, two men casually walked up to the passenger side. Without a word, they pulled their guns and fired multiple rounds into Bilotti's head. Seconds later, Castellano opened the door, only to be shot 6 times before he could react. Witnesses said the killers didn't run. They walked calmly down the street, disappearing into the December crowd. Gotti sat in a nearby car, watching. Aftermath. Silence and fear. The murder stunned the underworld. No boss had ever been taken out in such a public, unsanctioned way. In a moment, the old rules of Cosa Nostra had collapsed. Gotti, within days, began maneuvering to claim the throne. By early 1986, he had installed himself as the new boss of the Gambino family, with Frank De Chico as his underboss and Gravano as a top enforcer. But he didn't just inherit power, he inherited attention. The FBI, already knee-deep in surveillance, intensified its wiretaps. They bugged Gotti's hangouts, planted informants, and slowly, patiently built their case. Castellano was gone. But the storm that would destroy John Gotti had already begun. Chapter 2. The Teflon Don Melts. If Paul Castellano's murder was the strike that made John Gotti king, it also painted a target on his back. As the city buzzed about the daring steakhouse assassination, the FBI smelled blood, and they were closing in with microphones, wires, and long memories. For the first time, law enforcement had a crack in the Gambino wall, and they weren't about to waste it. Bugging the Don. The key to Gotti's downfall wasn't a bullet. It was a wire, specifically a high-powered bug hidden in a wooden cabinet at the Ravenite Social Club in Little Italy. The FBI's Special Agent Bruce Moore led a unit that had studied Gotti's patterns for years. They knew he held court regularly at the Ravenite. But Gotti had been clever. He would sometimes take walk-talks, stepping out with associates to avoid bugs. So the feds changed strategy. With court approval, they planted a wire in an apartment upstairs, where Gotti often retreated for privacy. There, he talked freely. Too freely. He named names. He gave orders. He ridiculed rivals. Every word was recorded. The crew unravels. Sammy Gravano had always been Gotti's most trusted hitman and advisor. But even he noticed something changing. Gotti was loving the spotlight. He had become a celebrity gangster, dubbed the Dapper Don for his style and the Teflon Don for his ability to beat charges. But Gravano heard something he couldn't unhear. In one of the tapes, Gotti was blaming him, openly, for several murders, including ones they'd carried out together. It was betrayal in the blood. Facing life in prison, Gravano flipped. He became the highest-ranking mobster ever to turn state's witness, testifying in open court against Gotti in exchange for leniency. Trial tapes, the voice of power. In the courtroom, the prosecution didn't just present witnesses. They played the tapes. The jury heard Gotti in his own voice, commanding hits, mocking Castellano, and describing the murder like a chess game. The audio was crisp. The words were damning. "You gotta clip him," Gotti said on one tape, talking about a rival. "Make sure they know who's boss." The impact was seismic. The media swarmed. Headlines screamed. And for the first time in decades, the mob looked vulnerable. Not from bullets, but from bugs and betrayal. Conviction. In April 1992, John Gotti was convicted on all counts. Murder, racketeering, obstruction of justice. He was sentenced to life in prison without parole. The courtroom was packed. Reporters wept. So did the families of his victims. Outside, the crowd of Gotti loyalists, some crying, some shouting, faced off with federal agents. The king had fallen. Aftermath. The end of the code. The Castellano hit wasn't just the beginning of Gotti's reign. It was the beginning of the end for old-school mafia rule in America. Once the mob was untouchable. Now they were being taped, flipped, and buried in federal prisons. Gravano entered witness protection. Gotti died of throat cancer in 2002 at a federal medical prison. The world of Cosa Nostra would never recover. Trial tapes, FBI audio that shook the mafia. You got a problem with him. Take him out. That one line, spoken by Gotti, recorded by the FBI, became one of the most chilling pieces of evidence in mob history. In a strategic move, prosecutors didn't rely on interpretation. They let the jury hear Gotti's voice, dripping with authority, contempt, and calculation. Some jurors reported feeling physically sick, hearing how casually he ordered murders. The tapes covered everything. His reaction to Castellano's death, his mocking of rivals, his betrayal of Gravano, his view of violence as just business. They weren't just recordings. They were a confession. The Teflon Don's mouth had done what bullets couldn't, destroy him from within.